Marhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Marhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girvarir Hare. Gopi Jana Balaba Girvarir Hare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Channa Balaba Girvarir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Bhanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parabrajakachara Sathaya Sathashi Shimis Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Simple Devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Garanga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasad Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kinamane Namaste Saraswati Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Bhashkaja Adishitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, Text 2. Jnane nastvaham evesta svarto hetuscha samataha svargascha vapavargascha nanyorto madrite priyaha. Jnani nastvaham evesta svarto hetuscha samataha svargascha vapavargascha nanyorto madrite priyaha. Jnani nastvaham evesta Svarto hetuscha samataha. Svargascha vapavargascha. Nanyorto madrite priyaha. Vaishnavis, Yanina, of learned self-realized philosophers. To, indeed, aham, I. Eva, alone, Ishta, the object of worship, Svarta, the desired goal of life, Hetu, the means of achieving the goal of life, Cha, also, Samataha, the settled conclusion, Svarga, the cause of all happiness and elevation to heaven. Cha, also, Eva, indeed, Upavarga, freedom from all unhappiness. Cha, also, Na, not, Anya, any other, Arta, purpose, Mut, me, Rite, without, Priya, dear object. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. For learned, self-realized philosophers, I am the only object of worship, the desired goal of life, the means for achieving that goal, and the settled conclusion of all knowledge. Indeed, because I am the cause of their happiness and their freedom from unhappiness, such learned souls have no effective purpose or dear object in life except me. Report. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna stated that one should ultimately surrender unto him that knowledge by which the material world is seen as illusion. Material attachments are certainly problems for the living entities, since they are diseases of the spirit soul. One who has contracted a skin disease that causes terrible itching gains only flickering relief from scratching the unbearable sores. If he does not scratch, he suffers greatly. But by scratching, even though there is an instantaneous sensation of pleasure, unbearable misery follows as the itching increases. Real happiness is not found in scratching one's skin infection. Keep that in mind. I will not give one real happiness. Scratching one's skin infection, but rather in becoming free from such disease. It's a good analogy, you can see. Conditioned souls are harassed by many illusory desires. In desperation, they try to gratify their senses through the hopeless scratching processes of illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. They further try to gain relief through material society, friendship, and love, but the result is unbearable suffering. Real happiness is to eliminate completely the itching disease of material desire. Since material desire is the disease of the soul, one must acquire knowledge to treat this disease and eliminate it. Such therapeutic knowledge is essential as long as one is diseased, but when one is fully healthy, such technical medical knowledge is no longer interesting to the healthy person, and he may leave such knowledge to the doctors. Similarly, in the advanced stage of Christian consciousness, one need not think continually of one's personal problems, but may rather think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, with love and devotion. Lord Krishna advises in the previous verse that one should eliminate one's personal problems through technical knowledge of illusion. That's like technical knowledge about illusion, about the illusory energy, I think it means. After giving up constant meditation on such problems, one can then become a lover of God. Lord Krishna certainly guides each and every sincere devotee internally within the heart and externally through the bona fide spiritual master. In this way, Lord Krishna gradually trains his sincere devotees to give up their irrational attachment to dead matter. Once freedom has been achieved, a devotee begins to seriously cultivate his relationship with Lord Krishna in the spiritual sky. We remember about relationship from yesterday's class. One may falsely think that just as at a certain stage of advancement one ceases to concentrate on technical analytical knowledge of illusion, so at another stage one may give up loving devotional service to Lord Krishna. To nullify such speculation, Lord Sri Krishna here states in various ways that he is the supreme eternal goal of all truly learned human beings. Indeed, the most prominent scholars within the universe are the sages, such as the four Kumaras, who accept Lord Krishna as their only worshipable object. Because they have discovered they are eternal fragmental portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, they are not interested in fruitive activities and mental speculation. Lord Krishna awards celestial bliss and freedom from anxiety to his sincere followers who have no purpose or beloved object in life other than the Lord. Om Gyanatamanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksun Mithamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpatribhyascha Kripasindubhyebhyascha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. We see many historical examples of where humankind starts with very ambitious, very elevated goals, but sometimes those goals quickly dissolve into something quite different. I was thinking about in 1917 in Russia, there was the Communist Revolution. And it was a revolution against the Tsarist government, which was very oppressive, which did not have the needs of the people in mind and had so many different difficulties and bad qualities. So the communists started out with very elevated intentions of having a society that was free, where everyone was equal, where the workers were elevated to the proper place, where there was no tyranny, there was no injustice. So how did they achieve this? By a workers' revolution. And they had to establish what they called the dictatorship of the proletariat. So what does a dictatorship of the proletariat mean? Basically, it means you kill off everyone who is against you. And in fact, they even had, war between their own, slightly different groups, the Red Russians and the White Russians. So they killed each other off, even though they're communists. And finally, it reached the culmination in Stalin some years later, who he deported and killed at least 20 million of his own countrymen. And this was all for in the name of accomplishing this very idealistic goal. So here we have a problem with the ends and the means. Sometimes it's said that the ends justify the means, but that becomes very questionable, particularly if those means seem to be worse than any possible ends that you might be achieving. So, are the ends and the means one? Are they different? Does one justify the other? We may raise all these questions, but here we are learning from Srimad Bhagavatam that that is not an issue in Krishna consciousness, because the means and the ends, or the means and the goal, are one in bhakti. In this verse, there's actually four principles that they're saying are one, are the same, that are all coming from Krishna, all about Krishna. Krishna is stating that he is the object of worship, the ishta. He's the goal of life, the svartha, the goal, the ends. The means to achieve the goal, so those means to achieve the goal, the hetu, and the conclusion of all knowledge, samatha. So, the object of worship, the goal of life, the means to achieve the goal, and the conclusion are all the same. They are all Krishna. So this eliminates a lot of moral ambiguity, makes everything very simple. When Krishna is the center, we don't have these issues, and we don't have these types of, moral problems or ethical or even philosophical, metaphysical issues, because we this understanding of that Krishna is the object, he is the goal, he is the everything. So, another way of looking at this, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport to this verse, he actually cites Jiva Goswami's purport to this verse, which is interesting because this is our tradition. The Acharya always refers to the previous Acharya. So we see that Srila Prabhupada, I believe when he was translating, he had the the original, obviously Sanskrit or whatever, he had the original commentaries of Sridhar Swami, Madhvacharya, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Sanatana Goswami. Are these the five that Prabhupada used? I think at least those five Prabhupada used. And we see it seemed like primarily Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur was one of the principal ones that was used by Srila Prabhupada in reference. Now, Prabhupada put his own realization, of course, and he preached according to time and circumstances, so his commentaries also reflected the realities that he found in the 1970s Western world. But nevertheless, the foundation was the past Acharyas. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he took inspiration from some purports, especially Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so similarly, even Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, the great Acharya who Prabhupada refers to, and of course our authors of the BBT edition of the 10th, 11th, and 12th canto, frequently cite Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, or even if they don't cite him, they basically adjust or adapt his purports. Vishwanath also cites the purports of Jiva Goswami. So this is our tradition. We always look to the past Acharyas for our inspiration and for truth. Anyway, Jiva Goswami says that this verse means, Krishna, I make my appearance as the supreme sadhana, the means, and the sadhya, the goal for the jnani. So, the supreme sadhana and the supreme sadhya. We know that these are spoken about in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, the process of sadhana, bhakti, which leads to the goal, the sadhya. So, here again, these are the same. Worship of Krishna, as the worshipful object, is the means through the process of bhakti, hearing, chanting, Krishna. And then the goal is the same, to achieve Krishna. So we don't have this problem between the ends and the means, the process and the goal. In many processes, or other processes, I should say, of yoga or other types of activities like this, there's a difference. There's a distinction. There's a dichotomy. In other words, we do this process to achieve something. So if you're doing pranayama, if you're doing breathing, is the goal of life to be good at breathing? Well, probably not. You know, there's some other goal. In other words, to achieve self-realization, ultimately. But we do bhakti yoga, we hear and chant about Krishna so that we can perfect hearing and chanting about Krishna, worshiping Krishna. Bhakti is both the means and the end, is the point. So, talking about the goals of life, what is the svarta, the goal of life? We understand from the Vedic literatures that there's normally considered to be four goals of life. They're called purusharthas, that are needed in human civilization. And these purusharthas are considered goals or interests. They're dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And in Vedic culture, dharma is most important. And dharma becomes the foundation for artha and kama, or regulates artha and kama. In Western culture, we have reverse, artha and kama, economic development and sense gratification are at the top, and everything else is subsidiary to them. And in fact, one does a little bit of dharma on Sunday or goes to some church service, some very minimal dharma, and even there it's for the expectation of material results. Now, of course, if one is a little more advanced than these three goals, one reaches the fourth goal of life, which is liberation, or moksha, mukti. And this, Prabhupada explains, grows out of frustration for material life. So this is often valued by the jnanis and yogis. But Sridhar Swami, Prabhupada quotes in Bhagavatam 10:87-21, that the four purusharthas are no more important than a blade of grass. That's not very important, is it? A blade of grass. Why? Because first of all, the result of the chaturpurusharthas is automatically achieved through bhakti. One doesn't have to, you know, do a lot of external extraneous effort to achieve them, but they will be achieved in due course of time naturally through bhakti. And then it's also described that there's a fifth goal of life. And that goal is pure love of God. Prabhupada says in Purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ancha 7:24, purusharta, the goal of life, generally refers to religion, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally, liberation. However, these four kinds of purusharthas, of these, love of Godhead stands supreme. It is called the Parama Purusharta, the supreme goal of life, or Purusharta Shiromani, the most exalted of all Purusharthas. And in Adi 7:144, verses Panchama Purusharta say Prema Mahadana. Love of Godhead is so exalted, it is to be considered the fifth goal of human life, called Krishna Premadana, or the treasure of love of God. So this is the goal. The goal is to achieve bhakti, to achieve Krishna, to achieve love of God. So it's also mentioned here that sometimes one might think that in the advanced stage of life, because one gives up pursuit of knowledge, this is mentioned in yesterday's verse, right? In other words, one who, what does it say exactly? Yesterday it says that a self-realized person, etc., understanding material universe to be simply illusion, should surrender unto me both that knowledge and the means by which he achieved it. So this is talking about the process of jnana. The process of jnana is to understand through knowledge the material world and the difference between matter and spirit. But then it says that one gives up that knowledge and the means, which is the process of mental speculation, but through jnana, through the pursuit of knowledge, that one gives those up. So does one also give up bhakti? No. And that's the point. In one, an advanced stage, one never gives up the worship of Krishna, because as we were saying, it is actually the end. Service to Krishna is the eternal position of jiva, sanatana dharma. Therefore, even if one desired, one cannot give it up, because it is the essential element of the living entity. Prabhupada explains that this dharma is something which is essential, an essential element. So just as you could say the dharma or the sanatana dharma of fire is that it possesses heat and light. It'll always have heat and light or it's not fire. So in the same way, service is the sanatana dharma of the living entity. This is a recording, it's called Bhagavad Gita 1, 1966. I always like this, I quoted before, because it's the earliest recording of Srila Prabhupada. So in Prabhupada's very first lecture that was recorded and then transcribed in 1966, he's had a long discussion of this idea of sanatana dharma. Prabhupada said the eternal function of the eternal living entity, which is known as sanatana dharma, cannot be changed. When Sanatana Goswami asked Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the sarup, the position of the living entity, the Lord replied that the constitutional position of the living being is to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity is exempted from the practice of rendering service to other living beings, and therefore we can conclude that rendering of service by a living being is the eternal religion of the living being, of the eternal living being. So, that's the most fundamental aspect, is the idea of rendering service of our nature. So it's our eternal religious duty. Service to the Lord is always there with us, and therefore one does not become more advanced or more elevated or at a position when one somehow transcends the idea of service to the Lord. So that's an important point that's to be made in this verse. Also, I know in this verse there's two very important words, svarga and apavarga. They're mentioned in the third line, svargas chaivapa pavargas cha. This is translated that Krishna is the cause of happiness, svarga, which also refers to the heavenly planets, or in more general terms, happiness, and also the cause of freedom from unhappiness. That's kind of a double negative. In other words, you have unhappiness, and then you have the negation of unhappiness, or freedom from unhappiness, and so Krishna is also the cause of that. And I was looking at most often where apavarga is used, Prabhupada translated as liberation. So freedom from unhappiness or liberation from the unhappiness or the miseries of this material world is described as apavarga. There's a lengthy explanation in the purport today of how the example of a skin disease, which is actually very appropriate. Because, first of all, of course, just a little play on words, because sometimes Prabhupada uses the word skin disease, meaning our attachment to the material body. In other words, whatever the skin is, I'm white, I'm brown, I'm black, I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm male, I'm female. In other words, designations, Prabhupada would call skin disease. So, in a sense, it's kind of it's an appropriate analogy of the skin disease, because if one has a skin disease, is pointing out here, that scratching, if one has an itch, will give some temporary relief, but it always makes the condition worse. You'll simply inflame it, you'll make the whole thing worse, and therefore the itching or the irritation will come back even more strongly. So this is the example of the suffering we experience in this material world. Our senses are always looking for some relief. Our senses are always looking to enjoy. So we scratch that itch, and we try to indulge the senses with the idea that that is going to make us happy by our senses being happy. But of course, it makes the condition worse. Because what's the real condition? The real condition is being in this material world and having a material body. That's the disease. That's the disease condition of life, is not identifying with the spirit soul, but identifying with the body and identifying with matter. So if one scratches the itch, indulges in material sense gratification, it's furthering the identification with matter, right? It's furthering the identification with the body and the senses. And therefore, it's making the disease worse because it makes that attachment stronger. So, of course, the example here is, rather than trying to scratch the itch, better to get the medicine that's going to cure the disease. So that's what we want to do. So you go to your doctor or somebody or your favorite herbalist, naturopath, acupuncturist, or wherever you go to, and you get some cure. Maybe you get some salve or something that you put on, some lotion or something, that actually starts to cure the, and not only relieves the suffering, but actually may begin to cure or help the skin to heal itself. So in the same way, of course, we need the real medicine, the process of bhakti yoga, the chanting of Hare Krishna, which is going to cure our material condition of identification with this body. And therefore, real liberation, real freedom, or this what's called freedom from unhappiness, comes from freedom from sinful reactions, freedom from taking birth again, and realizing our real relationship with Krishna. So we know that we are entangled in this material world through a process of action and reaction. And those are described in Nectar of Devotion, that we actually suffer from in three ways. First, we suffer from the sinful reactions to past karmic past activities. Through that past karma, we suffer. But then there's also the seed of that sinful reaction, which is the desire that leads to the process of sense gratification, further suffering. And then why is there the seed of sin, the material desire, which leads to the sinful reaction? And it's described that as due to avidya, or ignorance. So through ignorance, which is both the cause and the result of suffering, it's explained, then one identifies with the material world, identifies with the material body, and therefore we have these almost unlimited material desires, which lead to acting materially, which lead to reactions to that activity, and the whole cycle continues and perpetuates. So, of course, this is all explained in the sixth canto, the story of Ajamil, in so many of the different verses, that ultimately there is the desire within the heart. In fact, this was how this whole story of Ajamil starts, right, with Maharaj Prickett's question. You know, he says, you know, how can we, he says, you know, he talks about the process of prayashchitta, or atonement. He says, what good does it do, you know, that one commits sinful activity, then one atones for the sinful activity, but because the desire is still there, it continues, and he gives the example, the elephant bathing, comes out, rolls in the dust again. We've talked about that one before. So, basically, the process is that if I'll just read this. This is 6:217. Although one may neutralize the reaction of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other such methods, those pious activities cannot uproot the material desire in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, he is immediately freed from all such contamination, because they are actually curing the material desire, the knot in the heart. Okay? So the reality of this material world is nobody wants suffering, but yet it comes, as Prabhupada would say. In the highest plane of the material world, down to the lowest, all are places of misery, wherein repeated birth and death take place. So we want to become free from this. But that comes about through being awarded liberation by Krishna. Krishna, again, is the means of achieving the goal. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1-26, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, the demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anybody. Hiranyakasipu underwent a severe type of penance for becoming eternal in life, but his worshipful deity Brahma could not satisfy him with such blessings. And we all know how that turned out. No matter how he tried, he could not defeat death. He could not defeat Lord Nrsingadev, who tricked him. Therefore, Vishnu is called Muktipad, or the Personality of Godhead, who can bestow upon us mukti. liberation, and none else. So this can only come from the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah. So a very instructive verse today, how Krishna is the source, most worshipful object of worship. Most worshipful object of worship. Okay, the highest object of worship. He is the means to achieve liberation, the means to achieve the highest goal of pure love of God. He is the goal. The goal is achieving Krishna. And the settled conclusion of all knowledge. In other words, the highest understanding, the highest knowledge that we can achieve is to understand Krishna and understand our relationship with Krishna as eternal servant. Okay? And then we will within, and then we also define that Krishna is the cause of all happiness, the real source of happiness that cannot be experienced with this material body and senses, and is the source of freedom from suffering in this material world. Okay? I'm going to stop there because I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about Ramanujacharya, whose appearance is today. Ramanujacharya, as we know, was a very, very important leader of the Vaishnavas. His lifetime is from 1017 to 1137. Some of you may remember last year there was the 1000th anniversary, right, of his appearance, and there was probably, especially in South India, a lot of celebrations. So he was born 1,000 years ago. He said 1137, that means he lived to 120 years old. It's interesting because when you look at different sources, sometimes, a lot of times because, you know, it's a long time ago, and people did not seem to keep real good dates in history. So a lot of our acharyas, there's dispute about when they actually lived and how long they lived and what date. The only dispute I found was some people say he lived to 128 rather than 120. So at any rate, he lived a long time. And he's, of course, Ramanujacharya is the modern representative of the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya, coming from Lakshmi. We know there's the four Vaishnav Sampradayas, but Brahma, Rudra, Kumaras, and the Sri Sampradaya from Lakshmi. So he is a leading exponent of Vaishnavism. And of course, he came at a time when Shankaracharya, who was about 100 years, 200 years before, had established impersonalism, Mayavadi philosophy throughout India. So he had quite a challenge, you know, to take on the Mayavadis. And of course, he defeated them in so many different ways. He also, of course, wrote important commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra. And he refuted the arguments of Shankara, and his commentary was known as Sri Bhashya. So there's many extensive quotes from Ramanujacharya in Srila Prabhupada's books. Adi 541, he quotes Ramanujacharya quite extensively in his arguments against impersonalism. Other places, Ramanujacharya, of course, is one of the four Vaishnavacharyas that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu drew inspiration from, and he took two key points from Ramanujacharya. He taught the tenets of bhakti unpolluted by karma and jnana, in other words, pure devotional service without karma and jnana, and also service to the Vaishnavas. Those were two of the important points that became part of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's full explanation of Achintabheda Vedatattva as the highest understanding of Vaishnava philosophy. Since Ramanuja's philosophy is also called Vishishtadvaitavada, or specific monism, which means the Supreme Lord is the one only reality and truth, Advaita. In other words, Krishna is everything, there's nothing different from him, and yet he accepts distinct designations, Vishishta, of chit, transcendental, and achit, material. So this is important. In other words, this is part of the one indifference, the Chintabheda-Veda-Tattva. In other words, this is the beginning of it. Krishna is one, but yet he accepts both that which is transcendental and that which is material as separate, as different energies of his. He was very instrumental in refuting the arguments of Shankaracharya. says, Ramanuja's philosophy is a stumbling block to the Mayavadis because his arguments defeat their philosophy and scrupulous detail. Students of Vedic philosophy know very well how strongly Sri Ramanujacharya's Vishishtadvaitavada and Sri Madhvacharya's Tattvavada contest the personal Mayavadi philosophy. That's from Prabhupada Adi 7.110. And within that seventh chapter in those verses, there's many of these arguments are elaborated for those who want to study these more. Okay, we'll give one pastime. I'd heard this one before, and I always like this one. It says, the seat of the Acharya at Sri Rangam was lying vacant without a successor to take over. Ramanujacharya was prevailed upon to assume charge. In other words, really take over as the Acharya in the line. Before doing so, he wanted to equip himself with the secrets of three great mantras. For this purpose, he approached one Tirukushtiyur Nambi, who made him come several times before actually instructing him. He cautioned Ramanudra that he should not give out the secrets to all and sundry, and if he did so, he would go to hell. In other words, he's giving a secret mantra, and if he reveals it, he'll go to hell. Immediately upon receiving the instruction of the mantra, Ramanuja climbed to the top of the steeple of the temple and proclaimed to the large gathering disciples assembled there the purport of instruction. In other words, he gave the mantra out to everybody, By the time of this episode, he'd already gathered a huge following of disciples who congregated at the main entrance to the temple, and he was thus addressing his disciples. The well-known Acharya, Tirukushtiyur Nambi, was so enraged, he demanded an explanation. Ramanuja replied that he did not give out the secrets, and even if he had transgressed the specific warning of the guru, only he himself would go to hell, but the multitude of humanity that listened would be saved spiritually. In other words, I'm disobeying your order, okay, I'll go to hell, but it's more important to give this out so everyone else was liberated. The guru was overwhelmed by this reply. Embracing Ramanuja and appreciating his broad-mindedness, he called him Impura Manar, O my Lord, and declared that Sri Vaishnavism would thenceforth be known as Ramanuja Darshanam, the light of Ramanuja. And just one last thing I found that was interesting that I actually had forgotten this or hadn't read this before. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells a pastime of Ramanuja going to Jagannath Puri, and he goes before the Jagannath deity, and Lord Jagannath speaks to him and instructs him. And he tells him to go to Navadvip. Interesting. And he told him about the future advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which would probably be about 400 years later. Ramanujacharya, although, of course, the Sri Vaishnavas are worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan, he worshipped Vishnu and Narayan, form of Krishna, but he was so attracted to this description of Gauranga that he wanted to be part of his pastimes. And it's described that later in Chaitanya Leela, Ramanuja took birth as Ananta Vipra. And so he took part in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well. Anyway, that's attributed to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings. I forget which book, but it's in one of his books. Was it? Okay. Thank you. Okay, so anyway, Ramanujacharya, very, very great acharya in our line, very, very important, extremely instrumental, very influential even today. The followers of Ramanujacharya, especially throughout South India, very, very prominent. So very important, great spiritual master. Not exactly in our line, in a different line, but obviously very complementary Vaishnava line. Okay. I'll end at that point. Any questions on the verse? If you can remember back to or what we spoke about. Let me read that once more. Today's verse. For learned self-realized philosophers, I am the only object of worship, the desired goal of life, the means for achieving that goal, and the settled conclusion of all knowledge. Indeed, because I am the cause of their unhappiness and their freedom from unhappiness, such learned souls have no effective purpose or dear object in life except me. Jai Prabhupada. Prabhu, Yamaraj?
Thank you, Gloria. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your class. I've been texting my brother, preaching to him. So anyway, yesterday he sent me a text, and he was saying that all the problems in the world comes from religion and religious fanatics and things like that. So he's an educated man too. Yeah. So anyway, so I responded. But what would be your response to something like that?
There have been many problems in the world caused in the name of religion. This is absolutely true, because in Kali Yuga, religion is often not, you know, is not given purely. And we have materialistic religion is often perpetuated, and therefore we see intolerance, we see, and I'm sure he cites things like inquisitions and, you know, all the sort of different things that people have done in the name of religion. That's absolutely true. But that's not real religion. It's not true religion. True religion is described as that which is enunciated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's true Dharma. What's that? Yeah, very well. And so if one is actually perpetuating or propagating true religious principles, which is Sanatana Dharma, which is the eternal religion of the soul, or worship and service to Lord Sri Krishna, then this does not create problems, but it solves problems. And that's what we were talking about today, that the real problems in life are solved. Because what are the real problems? The real problems are birth, death, disease, and old age. It's an interesting question. I remember this very vividly, because in my initiation letter, Srila Prabhupada wrote about this topic. And he wrote to us and he said that he had been recently just discussing with some professor. And the professor was saying the real problems of life, he wasn't saying were caused by religion, but he said are things like pollution, war, racism, all these sort of things. He said these are the problems of life. And Prabhupada said to him, no, actually, the real problem of life is lack of God consciousness. You know, and everything else comes from that. He says, so we need to, very much propagate this knowledge of Krishna consciousness through systematic propaganda work. We need to give people real religion. Because he was saying, and then he quoted the verse, Nityo Nityanam Ekanekara. Who knows that one? Since Prabhupada cited that in my initiation letter, you'd think that I should be able to memorize that. Anyway, I'm such a poor disciple, what can I say? So, in other words, of all eternal living entities, there is one supreme living eternal entity, and he is providing for all the others. So Krishna is providing for everyone. Our job is to worship Krishna, and if we are in harmony with Krishna, if we're in harmony with God's will, and we're in harmony with his plan, real religion, then that will solve the problems of life. That's also discussed in the third chapter, verse 11, I think it's got in the purport of Bhagavad Gita, you know, where Krishna says that he's the source of, you know, all the sacrifices to Vishnu are there, and by performing those sacrifices, everything will come. So, again, Krishna says in many places that all of these material problems will be solved through the worship of the Lord. Anyway, there's so much could be said, but that's basically the thrust of how I would answer that. Okay. Any other thoughts, questions?
While you are speaking, I'm the object of worship, I'm the means of worship, I'm the expected result, and I am also the cause of happiness and cause of removing unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like nobody is more dearer than me to that Gandhi Bhakta.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like it's almost fit to the definition of pure, except there is no rendering service much given from the Jnani side. So Krishna is revealing from his side what he thinks He is to them.
That's a great point. That's a very good point, yes. Because he's still addressing the Gyani at this point, right? Not the pure Bhakta. And so, in other words, he's really giving it basically the highest realization that a Gyani could have, right? Of understanding him as the object. But he does say the object of worship, Ishta. So in other words, you know, he's still indicating that the worship is there. So, you know, perhaps this is addressed to sort of the, you said the Gyani Bhakta, or the Bhakta who has some, you know, there's Gyanis who have an inclination towards Bhakta, and there's Bhaktas that have some inclination towards Gyana, right? There's these mixtures. You know, it seems like, what do you think? Is it somewhere in the middle there?
I think so. There's no loving service.
Right.
His side to the Lord is not demonstrated.
Right.
It's a missing point.
Right. Of course, he says, their freedom and such learned souls have no effective purpose or dear object in life except me. So there is, you know, there's certainly a strong indication of personalism here, a personal relationship. You know, that's there too. Yeah. But yet it's kind of from one who is, you know, oriented towards Gyana. Yeah. It's interesting how this evolves. And I think as the chapter evolves, as Madan Mohan was mentioning, of course, we end up with the punchline, you know, at the end, but give up all that, you know, knowledge, Gyana, speculation, and just serve me, worship me. Yes?
Trying to understand the point that Prangalinda was making. So then how does the Gyani worship? I mean, the fact that there is no aspect of seva to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what is the means? It says the means for achieving that goal. Of the object of worship. So what kind of worship?
Yeah, because, which is interesting, if we can find this, because the exact quote that Jiva Goswami said, the verse means, I make my appearance as the supreme sadhana and sadhya for the Gyani. So in other words, sadhana means, obviously, refers to active process, and the sadhya, we know, is the ultimate goal of life. So, in other words, it seems as though, my interpretation, I don't know if this is exactly right, is that for one who must be a very sincere Gyani, who's really trying to understand the goal of life and trying to understand God and to some degree, then he's revealing this. He's showing them the supreme sadhana, showing them the means of worshiping him to reach that ultimate goal. You know, in other words, because we know that there are those who do progress, the four Kumaras, Shukadeva Goswami, right? We have some examples of those who were perfectly realized in impersonal knowledge, who were, you know, who were perfected Gyanis, who then Krishna awarded them pure devotional service. So that's the way I'm taking this, that it's offered to them, they have this opportunity to come to the platform of devotional service.
So this is an expression of Krishna's mercy to the Gyanis, so to speak.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Adding to that, I was thinking that in the Bhagavad Gita, that in the Parpar Prabhupada write on that 724, that the Gyanis approach to the Lord, and they literally reveal and they practice, they recognize. But they do not want to take subordination of an advanced devotee.
Mm.
And as a result, they know the goal of life, they know the means, but yet they want to speculate, keep on aside little speculation about it. Because if they don't take the subordination, that speculation still maintains.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference between us. Like, we reconcile everything with Prabhupada's view. For them, there is no real highest authority that they accept as a guru.
And it's also, remember, referring to yesterday's verse and this one, in the purport says, in the previous verse, one should eliminate one's personal problems through technical knowledge illusion. After giving up that, one can then become a lover of God. So there's also the idea that one needs to transcend or go beyond that just attachment to knowledge, right? To make advancement, yeah. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.